On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we're up in the air with Diane Morgan for Series 2 of Mandy on the BBC, heading back to school with Nicola Coughlan in Big Mood on Channel 4, and finding ourselves under house arrest courtesy of Comrade Lenin, along with Ewan McGregor in A Gentleman in Moscow. And if that weren't enough, Ewan himself swings by the podcast a little later on to talk all about it. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that is seriously considering taking a few days off work. Why, you ask? Because to celebrate the 25th anniversary of Farscape, Shout TV, which I'm reliably assured is an actual thing, began a 24/7 Farscape marathon yesterday on their service, which again is apparently a real thing. So you can experience the magnificence of Henson-created Muppets and bold genre-bending sci-fi in one glorious stretch. What is Shout TV, you ask? I haven't a fucking clue, but let's not worry about it.
Are you getting paid to mention this?
Absolutely not. I don't even know what it is. But Farscape is very exciting, and obviously no one is more excited than UK. Music to both of your ears, I would imagine, being, of course, Pilot TV's very own Hynerian Emperor, Boydie the 16th, and our podcast resident Delvian priestess, Pau Zotto-K.
What are you talking about?
It is just word soup, but hi, yeah. James, how are you?
I'm good. Kay, I don't know how much I've ever talked to you about Farscape.
No.
It's a sci-fi series that I used to bang on about that Terry used to call Fire Escape, it has Muppets in it.
Oh, okay. And so you're excited by this news?
I'm excited that this random thing that apparently is a thing that I've never heard of, and I'm not even convinced it's an actual channel. It might be online only, or it could be American. Who knows? Who cares?
Did you get this from a reliable source?
Yes, if by reliable source you mean the internet.
Fine. Cool.
So yeah, it's a thing that's happening, because it's 25 years, 25 years of Farscape.
Isn't it all on? Did you say this just now? It's all on ITVX, isn't it?
It might well be. Yes,
it is. I believe.
But it's being shown. I mean, in this streaming age, what does it even mean when they're doing like a back-to-back 24/7 marathon? Like, it's kind of meaningless, because if they're all on ITVX, you could have your own marathon any day of the week.
Your whole life
point.
Is a Farscape marathon.
It's very true.
Yeah,
it's very true.
Yeah.
True. But yeah, it was a show that I very much loved back in the day. It is one that I have revisited since and been ever so slightly disillusioned
well,
with.
Well, we all revisited, didn't we, with Terry?
Yes.
In an old incarnation.
I think I pulled out a couple of episodes for her to watch.
Yes. Yes. I watched them as well.
You did? Yeah. Like, it has a certain kind of, you know,
ramshackle.
Yes. A little bit. But it did some bold things. Maybe this is an interesting bold. From the vault one day.
No, we're not doing it again. We've already done it.
Boys drawn the line. No, nope, not doing it. Not having it. Kay would hate it, so, you know. Although maybe.
No,
look, because, you say that, but you remember when she liked the Doctor Who episode Star Beast, which had the Meep in it?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
There are Muppets
James.
In Farscape, and I wonder whether it might scratch that same itch.
Oh, okay. Well, all right.
No.
Do you think, Boyd? I trust Boyd implicitly with this kind of thing.
No.
You don't think?
No.
She wouldn't like it. Okay, right. Well, that's solved that issue then. What have we been watching other than Farscape, Kay?
I have been watching Young Royals. Now, I don't know if I mentioned this last week, but I reviewed the first episode of the third series, and I had never seen it before, so I did it as a standalone, and I liked it so much, I've gone back and I've watched the whole of, six episodes of the first series.
And this is a Netflix really show, isn't it?
Yes, it's about the young Swedish prince who becomes crown prince because of a tragedy, and he's at boarding school, he's gay, and he's navigating becoming the crown prince, dealing with the fact that he's fallen in love, and the ramifications basically his duty and his responsibility over being a young guy who just wants to have fun and have his first, you know, throws into a relationship.
While being heir to the throne.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Exciting stuff. And so this is exciting and it's good. And did you watch it from the beginning or did you just press on with Series 3?
No, I've watched season one, first six episodes.
Right, okay.
I went
fine.
Back.
So you went back,
Yeah,
that was the correct way of doing it. Well,
yeah, obviously. I'm not like...
You're not an animal like Boyd, who would just plow on with season three, an absolute maniac.
No, but I wonder if you might like it, James. Do you want to try? Look at his
Do you think?
Face.
Yeah.
Do you think he will like it?
I've only seen like episodes of the first series. I think he'll quite like it, yeah.
Crucially... Is it in Swedish?
It is. Yeah.
Subtitles. So, subtitles.
And
yeah.
How substandard are the subtitles? That's the question.
There are no fake Shoguns subtitles in the middle, no.
See, you've lost me. You've lost me. Shogun or bust?
Remember we discussed this about the VPN line?
Yeah.
In the Pilot
That is
Plus.
True, on Pilot Plus, yeah. Yes.
Someone suggested, rather than bang on about it all the time, James should just get a VPN line.
I should shut up about Shogun and just watch it on Hulu and then I wouldn't have to moan anymore. But then where would be the fun in that?
No,
where
and also where would the content for this podcast be?
Exactly. This is gold. This is subtitled gold I'm bringing people.
Mm. So that's what I've been watching. Mainly Young Royals and just like, yeah, I can't stop watching now. So
very good.
I'm sure I'll polish off the second season by next pod.
How many episodes are there?
Six per series.
Yeah.
And yeah, three series.
Yeah. I've just come from a screening, which I hosted the Q&A for, of ITV's new high-octane plane set thriller, Red Eye, which stars Jing Lucy, who is in Crazy Rich Asians, you'll recognise her. Richard Armitage, who's in
Every
Harlan Coben. Leslie Sharp, the great Leslie Sharp, who I'll be chatting to for this very podcast soon. And it's written by a guy called Peter A. Dowling, who wrote, among other things, Flight Plan, which is one of the all-time classic plane set thrillers with Jodie Foster.
I know it well.
Same. And so I met him just before I was hosting the Q&A with him. He was a lovely guy, flew over from America, and he's a big fan of the podcast.
What?
So he was talking about, and the Empire podcast and the Pilot Super Wonka, he was talking about what great big nerd, as he's known, James is. It's his nickname on the Empire podcast. But he then told me, because I thought it was like, when ITV said to me, can you host the Q&A after the screening of this thing, Red Eye, which is all about set on a plane. And I like, well, if anyone heard me banging on about how much I like plane set shows mm-hmm. when we did Hijacked,
yeah.
right? Genuinely, I'm obsessed. This is one of my favourite genres of all time. TV, film, whatever. In fact, I need to write the book about plane set things if any publisher's listening. It'd be fascinating.
Commission him.
He said he heard that. He heard me talking about it. How much I am obsessed with plane set thrillers, and immediately got on the phone to ITV to say, when you do the screening, can you get Boyd to host it? Because he loves plane set thrillers.
I thought it
was a coincidence. So I was like to ITV, oh, that's amazing, because I really like it. And they're like, yeah, that's brilliant, isn't it? He was like, he engineered the whole thing.
So what I'm hearing is, this is our calling card for business.
Yes. Do you know what I love? I love TV shows about chocolate. Love them. Absolutely obsessed with TV shows about chocolate and cakes.
Yeah.
Can't get enough of them.
Yeah. Do you know what? Can't get enough of them. For real, just side note, should do a documentary on Patricia Valerie, and then we could just.
I'm assuming they probably have at some point. I don't know. I mean, they've done a lot of retail outlets.
Okay. Channel 5, hit us up if you want some.
Yeah. Well, you could pitch that. You could pitch that to Ben Frau, head of Channel 5. Maybe you'll go for it. Maybe I'll pitch my history of plane set films and TV shows. Fascinating.
But anyway, enough of our side hustles.
So I've watched, anyway, that is a six-parter that we will be, I'm sure, reviewing soon. It's arrives on ITV in a few weeks' time. And
can you give us a gist? Was it like?
It's, I'll give you a gist. It's Richard Armitage is accused. He's a doctor, and he's accused of being involved in a car accident with a Chinese woman. And he's back in Britain from having travelled from Beijing. He's immediately grabbed by the police at the airport, and they accused him of this crime, leaving this woman to die, basically, and while he got in a car crash with her. He denies the whole thing completely. He says he's a completely innocent man. And they fly him back to China on the red eye immediately so they can face the Chinese authorities effectively.
I'm already predicting doctored footage. He's in a bad
situation.
All kinds
of stuff like that. But it's also very complicated. Like basically it's a plane set whodunit is what it really is, because you're like, oh, someone's died, and there's lots of different possible.
So it plays out
suspects.
On the journey back to
it
China.
It plays out on the journey back to China. Yeah.
Oh, amazing!
And you know how in Hijacked, and again, all similarities are purely coincidental because it was written and filmed probably at the same time. How in Hijacked, there's a whole thing about the politicians on the ground. Well, Leslie Sharp is the head of MI5. She's the one on the ground dealing with the whole thing from her point of view, trying to kind of intervene and sort out what the hell's going on. So yeah. It's. I haven't said, you know, what I think of it, because that would be a spoiler, but we will be hopefully reviewing it in a few weeks' time.
Exciting.
When's it on?
No, TX date not yet confirmed, but I think it'll be kind of mid to late April, roughly.
We can do a spoiler chat on it.
Soon, yeah.
Is it dropping, do we know? So, actually, it'll be one episode a week, right?
I don't know yet, actually. I don't know. It might with ITV, you never know. They might do it. They might stream it on ITVX immediately. I think most things, you can watch all the episodes now on ITVX as it goes out on ITV1. Sometimes they do two a week. They're doing two a week with Passenger, which are reviewed on Plus.
Yes.
They might do two a week with this. Sometimes they strip it, because who knows? But yeah, we make big ITV events. And the other thing I did this week, the other big name drop of the week, is of course that I interviewed, I think I can say this now because it's done and going to press this week, for the next issue of Empire, Shuti Gatwa and Russell T Davis.
Did you use the headline, he shooties, he scores?
I did, but they didn't go for that for some reason.
Strange.
Yeah, the Empire editors, yeah, they ruled me out, overruled me. But yeah, I got a long, lovely long chat with them.
How were they?
May or may not have seen something from the BBC. I can't say more.
You can't say that. A BBC sniper will take you out.
Yeah, no, but there's a little bit of news, which we'll come to, Doctor Who news, which we'll come to, I'm sure, in the news section.
Exciting.
But that was an absolute joy, yeah. Absolute fantastic privilege. To speak to them together.
Can I just add something I just remembered I watched?
Yes, of course you can.
Coma. I dipped into it.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, the Channel 5.
Yeah. Do you know what? So did I. And you know how you, because do you keep a list of what you've been watching? So I forget, but yeah, I watched the first episode and it was good, right?
Yeah. And also, do you know what, so you set up the premise, go on.
Now you're going to, well, basically a guy, there's these kids kind of terrorising a street, Jason Watkins.
Right, so
I was playing for time while I remembered his name.
That's why I threw to you the premise, because I couldn't think of the name.
Kids are terrorising this street and where Jason Watkins lives. And basically things come to a head. This young guy, you know, is behaving terribly. Watkins intervenes, punches him basically in the face. He falls down and hits his head on the thing and falls into a coma, this young thug basically. Yeah. And then then the police come and Watkins tells them he wasn't involved. He just says he observed it and he lied.
So basically, tense.
So from that point, he's caused this guy to end up in a coma hospital. He's not admitting it to the police. Mm. He's got a neighbour played by David Bradley who saw the whole thing and says, I've seen the whole thing. And it's all set up to be a really tense, intense kind of situation of a guy who's got
because
a sense situation.
Because this guy's character is so meek and mild as well. That's the other thing. And he's going through financial, he's got financial issues. So he's really stressed out. He's being constantly provoked by this oik. And he finally snaps. And you can just see how something like this could happen. And so consequently, it's just so like tense to watch because you're like, oh God.
It's a good setup.
Yeah, really good setup.
It might be even better than Love Rats.
Don't say it. Don't say it.
No, surely not.
I mean,
could I just bring things back to Love Rat a little bit? Because,
of course, always.
Because I saw my mum the other day and she was, as is her wont, talking about Love Rat. And she told me how it ends. Now, obviously not going to say that here, but bloody hell. She told me the ending of Love Rat. And I was she was like, you will never have known. She was leaving and she goes, you'll never know how it ends. Like, I'd never have guessed. And I was like, go on, tell me how it ended. Show me the end. I was like, are you kidding? And so now that's
do you think I should watch it?
I don't know, maybe.
All right,
maybe you should go back and watch Love Rat.
Because I wasn't being as snooty magooty as you were. I just said,
I mean,
you know,
no one can be as snooty magooty.
Accurate.
As Jamie, when it comes to Channel 5 dramas.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I'm gonna watch the rest of it.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, so that was my Channel 5 watch this week.
Okay. I've watched nothing on Channel 5, I'm sorry to say. For those of you who subscribe to Pilot Plus, you'll already know this, but I watched all of One Day. I binged the entire rest of it and was a wreck. I was a little puddle on the floor by the end of it. It was a lot, so much so that the most recent episode of Pilot Plus, we did an impromptu spoiler special for One Day at the end.
Yeah, well, you demanded it.
Yes.
I demanded it.
He says impromptu. Basically, he said, I'm just going to start talking about it. Can we do it now? we've had no prep.
Yeah, I may have sprung it on them, but I needed spoiler therapy. I needed to talk about it. I had a lot to get off my chest. There was a lot to talk about.
Did you cry?
Oh God, yeah. I was absolutely destroyed by it. Yeah.
A proper ugly cry.
Oh, I was just like
oh, let me take a picture.
Yeah, it was just like that. It was very upsetting. But it was really, really good. So if you too have suffered through One Day in a ball of like ugly crying, do feel free to subscribe to Pilot Plus and listen to our little bit of therapy. We also talked about The Office. The Office was our From the Vault episode in this week's Pilot Plus, which is very exciting.
Which James had never seen. And
true.
Spoiler alert. Wasn't as cringed out as we feared.
Mm. And I did extra homework, so I deserve credit for that as well, because I not just watched the UK Office, I also watched the pilot of the US Office, which is basically the same episode of television. But nevertheless, I watched both of them back to back.
Gold star for you this week.
That's right. Mm. That's right. Good time. And we reviewed Passenger, as you mentioned, Boydie, which is on ITV and aired yesterday on Sunday on ITV.
Correct. Yes.
And it's ongoing. Well, and it's on tonight as well,
tonight,
isn't it?
Well,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, correct.
Passenger with Wumi Masaku. What else have I watched? I've watched all of, except for the final episode of Series 2 of Extraordinary. Still enjoying that a lot.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of fun. Halo, I'm up to the finale. There's one episode left of Halo. I'm loving that. Really, really enjoying Season 2 of Halo, so that's great. And I also watched an episode of Trigger Point. I'm very slowly making my way through the second season of Trigger Point. I am now, I think, 4 episodes into the 6th episode.
That's another show that I forgot to mention, probably, a week by week, where I just was watching it. Because I watched the first two.
Yeah.
And then I watched it live, pretty much week by week, and it was really good. And it's really, the thing about that show, I've just interrupted you.
No, go for it.
Was how clever they are at creating really high dramatic things happening within the bomb disposal unit. Like, plausibly, they give them really, really massive things to deal with, don't they? Every single week. I thought it was amazing.
It is one of these shows where everything explodes.
Yes.
Like everything. It's like, I'm going to pick up a cup of tea, that cup's going to explode. Like, almost everything they touch explodes. So, but it gets to this point where, because it's an inherently quite like stressful thing that you're a bit nervous about it, you're quite tense all the way through every episode because everything they touch might blow up.
So you don't become immune to it?
No, I don't think you do. Like, certainly I haven't. Yeah, I'm still quite like stressed a lot of the time that anything they touch is gonna explode.
You've had a lot of stress watching this.
Yeah,
right?
I have.
So one day, emotionally stressful.
Yeah, very emotionally stressful. Trigger point, just explosion, stressful. Halo has been quite intense. Not stressful, but it was quite an intense one. Extraordinary is not stressful.
No, it's just a joy.
Yes, there's lots of fun. The whole Jen Gislord plotline is a delight from end to end to talk about as well as just to see. It's a lot of fun. And there was a character in there who I was introduced to called Taylor, and her superpower is she can mind control anyone with her own name. So she surrounds herself with people called Taylor because she can mind control them. How they didn't squeeze a Taylor Swift gag in there, I do not understand.
Insane. I genuinely thought that's what
you were. That felt like an open goal to me, but who am I to judge? But I still really liked it. Maybe it was too first base. They were like, no, that's too obvious. Or maybe they just thought they'd get sued. Who knows? But it was fun. I like Extraordinary. And that is what I've been watching.
Well done. Well done for crucially not just watching West Wing or Friends.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I have watched quite a lot of Friends. I'm now at the... I just finished season 8 this week, I think, which is the two-parter, the one where Rachel gives birth. Mm. So it's where Rachel gives birth to baby Emma. So my rewatch of Friends, which I have not been talking about an awful lot, generally speaking, but it is ongoing. I'm ploughing through it in the background. Just finished season 8. Mm. I will keep you updated.
Thanks. I mean, I watch Seinfeld every night, by the way. So, you just don't talk about it.
Yeah, we just assume that that's the case.
Yeah, it's true.
Entirely fair. Now, do you want us to have this week's interview, or shall we segue into the listener question? What do you want to do next?
Let's have the interview.
Let's have the interview, says Kate. Fine. Well, this week's guest should need no introduction. Ewan McGregor stars in A Gentleman in Moscow this week. This is based on the novel by Amor Towles, and it's landing on Paramount Plus on Friday the 29th of March. And in this one, he plays a member of the Russian aristocracy who's kind of falls foul of the Bolsheviks after the October Revolution. But that doesn't stop him from pausing to drop by the Pilot TV podcast and tell us all about it. So this is Ewan McGregor talking to Amon Warman about A Gentleman in Moscow, which we are going to be talking about a bit later on.
Would like to be joined on the Pilot TV podcast by the star of A Gentleman in Moscow, Mr. Ewan McGregor. How are you, sir?
I'm really good. How are you?
I'm really good, really good. Really excited to meet you and talk to you today. And I've been loving this show. They're giving me 7 episodes. I've watched them all.
Oh, wow.
They just gave me the 8th one, the final one, like a couple hours ago. I haven't watched it yet, but I'm saving that for myself. I'm very excited. I've been loving the show.
Great.
I know this is based on the best-selling book by Amor Towles. And I'm wondering, did you read that before or after you read the script for the show? And was there anything that you took away from the novel that you put away, that you put into, rather, your performance?
Yeah. I mean, the truth is, I think I'm a bit vague in my memory, but I was introduced to a man called Tom Harper, who's a British director, producer, and he's one of our executive producers. And I started speaking with him, and he introduced me to Ben Vanstone, who is our writer of the TV series and our showrunner. And after my meetings with both of them and reading probably, I think, the first episode or maybe 2, I'm not sure, I was in. I knew I wanted to do this. I put my name to it and we started off, you know. And for a wee while there, it was just the 3 of us trying to think about who's the best director and how's the best way to do it. And then I started reading the novel, Amor's novel. And I just loved it. I haven't enjoyed a book so much in a long time. I never wanted it to end, you know. From halfway through it, I started really slow reading. I was doing a couple of pages a day because I just didn't ever want it to be finished. And the truth is that everything I do in front of the camera is informed by the novel. I mean, everything. I just feel like he writes. We know who the that's why people feel personal connection to the book, I think, because his writing It becomes like a good book becomes the reader's book. It's theirs, you know, the way they've seen it. That's why it's often difficult to pull off an adaptation of a book on screen, because people are like, that's not what it should be like, or that's not what it was like, you know, for them. And but he's such a wonderful writer that I feel like I got everything I needed to play the Count from his novel. And I just, when I was in front of the camera, I was just trying to be that, trying to be the man I'd seen when I read the book, you know.
And there's a lot to the Count, Rostov. He feels a lot of regret, especially over what happened with his sister. But there's a lot of pride as well, even with what his country has done to him. What was your way into him? How did you unlock your portrayal of the Count, aside from the book, of course?
Yeah, I feel like his complexity is what makes him so fantastic to play. I think as actors, we're always looking for, you know, a character that's got depth and layers and, you know, just something to get your teeth into. And some of the things you describe here are all absolutely true of him. He's been imprisoned, albeit in this amazing hotel, but his circumstances are changed overnight. Not only that, he's lost all of his friends and his class, his people. He's not allowed to be who he is anymore, right? You're not allowed to be a count anymore. You're not allowed to be. So he's lost everybody that he knows, except Petrov, his Prince Petrov, who we see in episode one, his violin playing prince friend. Yeah, he's living through that, which must have been very traumatic and difficult. Also, in his past, he's lost his sister, and we learn through the series that he does have a very heavy hand in why that happened, and is carrying the guilt of that and the loss of the grief and the loss of his sister. And in the meantime, he believes in optimism, and he believes in making the best of whatever is in front of your nose. And so so all of those things at the same time are fun to play with, you know. And I love the way Sam Miller, our director, has played with that in the edit that we do get to see the Count alone in quiet reflection, and obviously with a heavy heart at times. And we don't necessarily exactly know why or what he's thinking about, but we will do later on, you know, as the series progresses. And I think that's really beautiful direction, that he's brave enough to let us have our own thoughts about things.
I imagine that another helpful way into making you feel like the Count was the mustache. And this is the most important question I'll ask you this entire chat. Is that all you? Is that mustache all you?
Yeah, it's all me. I'll tell you the absolute truth. As I grew, I did not want to have a stuck-on mustache. I've worn them in the past and they're horrible to wear. You don't want to move your lip because the glue lifts or it'll ping off. And so you become aware of it. And I didn't want to be thinking about my silly mustache. I wanted to be playing the Count. So I wanted total freedom. And I knew the only way to do that was to grow my own mustache. So I told them right off the bat, I'm going to do that. So we have to think about, you know, as we shoot it, we're going to have to shoot it more in story order, because as he gets older, I want it to get smaller and we'll have to trim it. And so we don't, you know, we won't be able to go back. Like, we'll have to know we've got all this first block done before we move on, you know. So it put a few restrictions on the actual shooting of it. But it was, of course, the best idea, because I did not have to worry about it. And by the time we started, I had a monster, a big old mustache. Mine's blonde, like I'm fair haired. So my mustache grows in really light and there's white in it now. And so we darkened it every day. Because it's difficult to dye facial hair. If you dye it, can look suddenly a bit Groucho Marx. You know, it's like it just doesn't look real. And I thought, I'm not going to grow my own mustache and then make it look fake by dyeing it. So we colored it every day. The only bits that are not me are at the very beginning. His little curls are, because they had to be snipped off. And they had to be snipped off on camera. So we couldn't do that to my actual mustache, or else we'd only get one take. You know, you couldn't do two or three takes. So We have tiny little curls that glued in underneath my moustache just for the wings at the beginning. And other than that, everything in the whole show is my own tash. And then we had to stop for the actor strike. You know, we were stopped because of the SAG strike for months in the middle of our shoot. And so I had to keep the moustache. Yeah, I looked a bit crazy because I'd dyed my hair. I had dark permed hair and a yellow moustache. So I didn't sort of match, you know. I looked a bit awkward for a while there in my own life.
So when the show was wrapped, how long after they called cut for the final time are you sort of waiting until you shave off the moustache? And what was that experience like? Did it feel like you were saying goodbye to the character when you did that?
Yeah, I think it was about 15 minutes. So it took me, we wrapped, we were shooting the last scene we shot. We were in Halifax in the northeast of England, and we shot the last scene outside. It's the scene where I carry Sophia from a taxi through the snow into a hospital. Oh, yeah. And that was our very last shot of the whole series. I lifted her in my arms. I carried her into the hospital, put her down. The door's shut. Someone went, cut. And then I went outside and went, okay, we got it. That's it. That is the show. We've wrapped. Everyone was hugging, saying goodbye. I got in the car, drove 5 minutes to the makeup trailer, walked into the makeup trailer and shaved it off with the razors right there and then. And it was amazing. Wow. It felt so good. It felt so good. I'd had it for a year and a half by this point, you know. And I miss it sometimes. Like, I'm driving my kids to school and I find my fingers going up to play with it and I remember it's not there, you know?
Oh, that's amazing. I love that. So you talk about the freedom having your own moustache gives you on a show like this. I imagine there's also freedom in not having to do a Russian accent. What were those discussions like? Was that ever on the table? And yeah, did it feel freeing to not have to sort of worry about doing that?
Yeah, we only ever discussed not doing it. That there was never a discussion to do it. I mean, it's, you know, there's already a level of suspension of disbelief in that you're not speaking Russian. We're in Russia. We're all Russian. We would be speaking Russian, or some of the aristocrats would be speaking French, but we're not. We're speaking English. So already you're like, okay. So we can sound like what we want to sound like. And Sam was very, very keen to allow, he wanted just the right voice for the right character. He didn't want a universal sound. He didn't want us all to sound proper English or, so everybody really was free to use whatever accent they wanted to use. Most people use their own accents, and I know my wife Mary wanted to sound, it was her chance to sound British for the first time, but at the same time she's playing a movie star, so there's some sort of movie star quality to her English accent. And I just felt really, Sam didn't mind, didn't want me to. But I felt very strongly that I look like an aristocrat in the hotel. I had to look like different, you know, I represent a people that have been wiped out or taken away or disallowed. And so I did want to, there's something about his maintaining his aristocratic look, which is a bit like a fuck you to the establishment. So in that, I wanted him to sound like he was posh, you know. So that's what I wanted to do. It just felt right for him. I tried in rehearsal not sounding posh and just doing it in my voice, but it just didn't sound, it didn't feel like him. It didn't feel like the Count anymore. So and the way he speaks is so particular. He's written, he loves language and he loves great writing, obviously, by the way he speaks. So there was something about that sound that matched that, I suppose.
And last couple of questions as we wrap up. There's a lot of beautiful exchanges in this show. One of them I wrote down, it used to take generations for a way of life to fade. Now the process can occur in the blink of an eye, which really stood out to me. And you've been acting in movies since 1994. Has there been anything that used to be commonplace when you first started out that has since faded away over time in movie making and TV show making?
Yeah, there's. It's always going to change. I think there's another line where I say it is the business of the times to change and the business of gentlemen to change with them. And that's true of filmmaking too. It's always going to evolve and it's always going to change. And the big change in my experience is I started working on film and everything was shot on film. And now most everything is shot on digital format. And that has made a change in the experience on set. The when there's actual film rolling through a camera, that's expensive. That's money that's running through the camera because it has to be processed, has to be. And when you're recording onto a digital file, that's cheap, right? So there's a focus on the actual take that's slightly changed because it doesn't matter quite so much to the people walking around offset, you know. But for the actor, it still matters a great deal, you know. The take is the take. And it's very, very important to us. It's the moment that the audience will see. And therefore, it's our only chance at this moment. And you want that focus to be high. On the crew, you know, you want everyone to be focused in so that there's no distractions and it's not ruined in some way. And I feel like that concentration of an actor is very fragile. It's a fragile thing. It can easily be broken. You know, somebody walking across. Oh, I don't know. That can easily be gone. Anyway, so there's been a shift there. There's been a shift in the business. The business has always been about money, and it always will be. You know, people that pay for films don't do it for fun. They do it to make money, and that's always going to be the case. But there is more those people, you know, there's always going to be that creatives versus finance battle in any art form, I suppose. But in ours, a lot because it costs a lot of money to do. It's expensive to make a movie. So, and I feel at the moment probably the balance is tipped, more with the money people being in charge, you know what I mean?
I'm holding out hope for season 2 of Obi-Wan.
I'd love it. I'd love to have a go. I'm open to playing him again, but there's no talk of it yet. We don't know if it's going to happen yet. I'm afraid to. I can't tell you.
Ewan, thank you so much for your time.
All right, mate. Take care. Lovely to talk to you.
That was Ewan McGregor. This is Kay Ribeiro, because it's time for the listener question.
This question comes courtesy of Henry Davis, who says, I've been rewatching Slow Horses this week and loving it for the upteenth time. And it made me think, are there any recent shows that have been easy / constant rewatches for you? Recent, James, not Friends or West Wing.
Ooh, so like recent shows that he thinks are like rewatchable.
Okay, I'm going to go, mine aren't recent, so I am cheating, but...
Hang on.
It's fine. Henry wouldn't mind.
I think he might.
I don't think so. I think he just thinks that you're
going to... say.
So, Schitt's Creek, I happily rewatch.
That's recent.
But the other one is Motherland, which is less recent, but I rewatch quite often.
I don't think it's that much less recent. It's been a couple of years since it was on last, wasn't it, Motherland?
It still feels quite recent.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So Motherland is a show that I have not watched all of. I really enjoyed it. But I've seen some of each of the seasons, but I've never sat and watched through
James.
All of it.
What's wrong with you?
So I have been meaning to go back and do it.
Is it too recent to do a pilot watch of that?
But having said that, Motherland is a bit like The Office of parenting in terms of excruciating cringe comedy.
It is a bit cringe, but it's not
very cringe.
But you
all kind of cringe. What's the word?
Cringeometer.
Cringeometer. It's weird.
Yeah.
Because Motherland is totally based on that, isn't it? I mean, is.
But also, I think you like the characters. Like, all of the characters are quite likeable. I mean, Lucy Punch's character maybe less so, but she's great anyway.
Well, except she gets her own kind of, you know, backstory, which explains her when you meet her mother.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Oh, no. I don't know what Lucy Punch's character's
Amanda.
Name is. Is it Amanda?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. The kind of like...
The
Queen Bee of the Mother Circle. Yeah. Yes, that's right. But yeah, they're all great. And I think Motherland's a great show. But I have been meaning to. It's been on my watch list to just binge through all of them.
Well, you know, Paul Reddy as well. So that's a double insult.
Well, perhaps what we should do is we should watch all of Motherland and then get Paul on to talk about Motherland if he would agree to do it.
Oh, I mean, it's the week of Paul Reddy this week as well.
Exactly. It is. We did two Paul Reddy shows this week.
Yeah.
So maybe we should do that.
I mean, I've said this before, but I can confirm that I've watched the current last season of Curb, every episode that's gone out so far, which is up to 8. I think 9 is on today as this podcast goes out, 4 times.
Four times.
What is wrong with you?
Yeah, boy, that's an illness.
I watched them twice over for my Larry interview. Then I watched a couple again just because. And then I watched them when they go out live kind of thing on Sky Comedy as well.
So basically, Boyd's off to his meeting. Hi, my name's Boyd Hilton. Yeah. I am a Curb addict.
Yes.
Wow.
Four times.
So there's that. This week's episode, by the way, is an all-time classic with Bruce Springsteen heavily featured, which is absolutely fantastic. Next week is the finale. Could not be more excited. We should have a special, I don't know, a special event starting with it.
Because you didn't get to see it, did you?
No one's seen it.
Are you going to watch it 4 times back to back just to get things out?
Probably, yeah. Mm. Maybe I will. Yeah. So there's that. And actually, Slow Horses I've watched a few times.
It's a very rewatchable show.
Because it's constantly funny. You forget how brilliantly they deploy, not so much jokes, but funny bits throughout the show. Really, really rewatchable.
Actually, I'd rewatch it for Gary Oldman because his character, right?
Every moment with Gary Oldman is gold, for sure.
And you would spot new things.
Yeah.
But it has a comfort watch quality to it, even though it's actually quite knotty and it's quite plotty and it's really well written.
Knotty, plotty, and
other words that rhyme with knotty.
Totty.
Yes, it's quite totty. Despite all that there is something just quite warm and inviting and almost soothing about it,
which I
rather like. So yeah, that's kind of a good show. The thing that I've kind of got at the moment is I know I was about to say I don't have time to rewatch things, but that's patently untrue, as you both know. But I certainly don't do it deliberately. It'll normally be that I'll fall down a rabbit hole, like when we did Banshee for From the Vault and Pilot Plus, and then I watched every episode of Banshee because I couldn't stop once we'd started. There's always a danger. Very nearly went down a Spooks hole when we did Spooks on Pilot Plus and binged all, whatever it is, 8 or 9 seasons of that. And the thing that stopped me doing it, luckily, was we watched the first episode for Pilot Plus, because the second episode of Spooks is so traumatic, that's what stopped me pressing on, because I couldn't face watching the second episode. So that's what saved me.
Yes, in fact, actually, I mean, this would usually be a postbag type of thing, but we had a message from Kieran Lee about that, because he was saying the second episode of Spooks traumatized him so much, it put him off the show altogether, and he never ended up going back to it.
Never went back to it. Understandable. But the thing is, it's a weird blip because that's the only episode like it in the whole run. There are some serious ones, some hard-hitting ones, but nothing as traumatic as that. And that's our second episode. So I imagine they put off quite a few people. It's like, imagine if you had the Negan episode of The Walking Dead with the baseball bat and that was episode 2. Like, that's quite a roll of the dice.
Yeah, that would be a lot to deal with, to be fair.
We've successfully talked around this question without answering it, which I think was well done.
Haven't we answered it?
Boyd's answered it. I've answered it.
Damn it. Oh, but you were disqualified, Kay, on a technicality.
Why?
Because you did exactly what he asked you not to and went back to a legacy show.
Motherland and...
is it that long
Schitt's
ago?
Creek.
A couple of years.
Schitt's Creek is disqualified. Motherland, I might let you have.
Schitt's Creek's more recent than Motherland.
I think they're both about the same.
No, when they
last episode, I bet the last episode of both of them is around the same time.
Actually, James, you Google it. Go on, number crunch.
Lazy. You can't even bother to Google.
No, because he'll do it because you want to be proven right.
No. I'm perfectly happy to accept if you wish to be right. That's fine.
Thanks. Always.
I'm not sure that I have an answer to this because I can't think of a recent show that I have rewatched. I don't tend to rewatch recent stuff. So when we
Breeders.
No, I don't even talk about that. But even films like for Empire, I watched Dune twice, but it's unusual for me to watch 2 films twice in succession when they first come out. Like, I like to let it mellow for a while and then sort of revisit
it.
Breathe. Exactly that. And with TV, because our watch lists are quite, long generally, I don't really feel like I have the bandwidth.
You are going to have to answer the question.
Yeah, I don't have an answer.
Okay, well, listen, you haven't let me down. You've let Henry down.
I've let Henry down. Yeah, okay. I'm sorry, Henry.
All right.
Well, that was, I guess, a kind of listener question. It's kind of hard to say. If you would like your question addressed on this particular podcast, then do... come at us at Pilot TV Pod on Instagram or on Twitter, or hit Kay up directly by going round to her house. Failing that, it's at Kay Ribeiro on the Twitters. Excellent. Let's move on now to news. And the only place to start, as Boydie pointed out, is the BAFTA nominations dropped just before we got into the studio. I have literally no idea what's happened, but I'm assured that Boyd does.
Yes.
What's happening, Boydie?
Well, I can break to you the news that the shows with the most nominations are as follows. The Crown 8, Demon 79.
What?
Which was an episode of Black Mirror.
This episode
of Black Mirror has got 7. Happy Valley, 7. Slow Horses, 6. The Sixth Commandment, 6. And Succession, 6. So those three shows, Slow Horses, The Sixth Commandment, and Succession. Sixth Commandment, written, of course, by a friend of the pod, Sarah Phelps, Phelpsy. Congratulations to her. Those are three of the best shows, literally, of last year and the last few years. And they're all heavily nominated, along with Happy Valley. Then in terms of who's got nominated for what, in the main categories, I mean, there are loads of categories. All I'll tell you.
The Bear.
Actress. If you want to go to that category, which is international program, here we go. The Bear, indeed, has been nominated. Beef on Netflix. Class Act.
What's Class Act?
Now, that's a good question. It's a French show. It's what it is. A relentlessly ambitious working class man becomes one of France's most controversial public figures.
Okay.
Fictionalized biopic of Bernard Tapie.
KSR, non-English language correspondent, I'm deeply disappointed in you for not knowing this.
I know, yeah, I've had some other complaints recently as well.
But other nominees in that category, The Last of Us, you'll be pleased to know.
Yes.
Love and Death, which was on ITVX.
I mean, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's a bit surprising.
Yeah.
And, of course, Succession.
Of course, Succession.
Which you'd think would win, but I had this last time because it was nominated last year or the year before, and I remember going to the BAFTAs and saying to Jesse Armstrong, I'm obviously going to win, and he's like, I don't know, he didn't win. It was beaten by something
awkward,
else.
Kind of, boys.
Yeah, it was awkward.
Going forward, just don't say with
No,
with
don't
this.
Curse no, it.
But I mean, it's got to win the show.
You would think. I would think it would be Succession. I mean, it could be The Bear, but I think it would be Succession.
But in terms of the acting, big acting categories, Best Actress, and Jon of Assange for Demon 79 Black Mirror, Anne Reed for The Sixth Commandment, Bella Ramsey for The Last of Us, James. I just keep thinking James as being like the publicist for The Last of Us because it's his favourite show. Helena Bonham Carter for Nolly, which I'm very absolutely thrilled about. Rusty Davis will be delighted. Sarah Lancashire, heavy favourite for Happy Valley, of course. And Sharon Horgan in Best Interest. Do you remember Best Interest? About the court battle over the kid. Brilliant. Best Actor, Brian Cox, Succession. Dominic West, The Crown. Kane Robinson, Top Boy. Papa Essiedu, The Lazarus Project. Good. Joe Barton, thrilled, friend of the pod. And Timothy Spall for The Sixth Commandment, fantastic. And best of all, and I'm so pleased about this, can you guess what I'm pleased about?
Tell us.
Because it's controversial.
Coogan.
Yes.
Coogan.
as Jimmy Savile in The Reckoning.
Good show.
I think it's brilliant because they could have avoided that, you know, but quite rightly he's been nominated.
I'm very pleased that Papa Essiedu got nominated there because brilliant. I would have thought Lazarus might have been the kind of show that they would overlook. Being, you know,
same.
Snooty.
Yeah.
But it's great and I love it. And I think he is just amazing in it. So.
Yeah, same. I'll just do the supporting actor. Sorry, there's loads of categories. I won't do every category. Honest, because we'll be here forever. But supporting actor, Amit Shah for Happy Valley. Ina Hardwick, do you remember?
He was great.
Brilliant. I'm pronouncing his name. I'm going to get to my favourite in a minute. Jack Loudon, Slow Horses, the aforementioned. Matthew McFadden, Succession. This is an incredible category.
Yeah.
Salim Dhawr for The Crown.
Who does Salim Dhawr play in the Crown?
I knew you were going to ask that. I think it's...
Isn't it Mohammed?
Yes, I think so.
Dodie.
Someone check that. Good.
Applosion.
And best of all, I think this is a real surprise. Have you got this in front of you, James?
I do know what you're referring to, yes.
Harris Dickinson for A Murder at the End of the World.
Yeah, that's a good shout.
Brilliant shout.
He's so good in that.
So good. Supporting actress Elizabeth Debicki, The Crown. She played Diana, obviously. Harriet Walter, Succession, brilliant. Jasmine Jobson, Top Boy, brilliant. Leslie Manville, The Crown, brilliant. Nico Parker, The Last of Us.
Yes.
And Siobhan Finneran. Well win.
I would love her to win
in Happy Valley.
I feel like she gets overlooked.
Could I just say, Nico Parker for The Last of Us, that is a big deal, bearing in mind she is in one episode of that show.
I was going to say, she's not in it much, is
no,
she?
No, she's just in the prologue. She is just in it's
amazing.
A hell of a performance.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
So the big category is drama series, The Gold. Remember The Gold?
I do, yes.
Happy Valley, of course.
Absolutely.
Slow Horses.
Nice to see that.
And Top Boy.
So the Top Boy thing, this is something. Top Boy is currently quite high on the list of things I really should watch.
You should. Mm-hmm. I said this when
I know you
brilliant.
Did. I've
it's
been called out about
show.
This a number of times. I got to watch Top Boy. Yeah. I really do.
You do. Limited drama, Best Interests, BBC One. Demon 79, which is clearly the episode they put in for Black Mirror.
Yeah.
The Long Shadow.
Yes.
Which is the, very good. And The Sixth Commandment.
Yeah.
Well done, Phelpsy. Fantastic. Scripted comedy, Big Boys.
Yes.
Kay's favourite.
Yeah.
Dreaming Whilst Black.
Fantastic show. I love that one.
Such Brave Girls, brilliant and extraordinary,
which we all like.
Soap, there's only three categories, Kay. three candidates, which says a lot about the declining.
Enders, must be.
Enders, Casualty and Emmerdale.
Yeah.
Yeah. I won't go into entertainment programmes, performance, not really us. Any others?
Are you invited? Where are you going?
I think I'm going. I was on the jury. This is what we should mention. Sorry, I knew there was something I forgot to say. It's Memorable Moment. I was on the jury to decide the nominees for Memorable Moment, which is the only category voted for by the viewers. And it's the best. I think I've been doing this category for years now. I think probably like 5, 6, 7 years. But I think this is the best nominations
really,
ever had.
Even better than your nomination of the Microwave Moment.
Yes, Microwave. Really? You may well scoff, and you have.
Me?
Microwave was legendary,
yeah,
iconic.
Of course it was.
The equivalent of Microwave, right,
tell me.
James, is in Beckham when David teased Victoria about her working class.
Is this the Rolls Royce bit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the Rolls Royce bit.
Which is a brilliant bit.
Even I've seen that
even
bit.
Even you've seen that. Then, I mean, this is great stuff. Doctor Who, Shooty Gutwars reveal when David Tennant
That's a great moment, which is a brilliant scene.
Yeah. Happy Valley, Catherine Kayward and Tommy Lee Royce's final showdown in the kitchen. Brilliant. The Last of Us, Bill and Frank's story.
I mean, that's, I mean, I know I'm here for it, but that's an entire episode, not a moment.
I probably can't talk about the deliberations of the jury, but it was discussed, which bit do you choose? But
you should have dialed me in on speakerphone. I'd be like, I think you're fine.
Yes, but there was a huge amount of love for that episode.
It should have been. If you were going to dial it in, it should have been the final dinner scene.
Well, that is the scene.
Yeah.
So that when they, if it wins, which it could do, because it's voted for by the public, has a massive, by the way, fan base, that's the word I'm looking for. That's what they'll show. Yeah, it is that moment, effectively. The Piano, which is the Channel 4 show about amateur pianists. Yeah, Claudia's show. That's when this girl called Lucy was 13, performed the piano in front of commuters at the train station. It was just amazing. Not very James. And Succession, Logan Roy's death. Now, this is another example.
Which specific moment?
Yeah. Right. Well, we had this
discussion again, episode.
In the jury, in the room. And, you know, I think I made the point that it's the whole episode is his death, really. But it is literally when
they're scrambling to make
I think when they're all the kids are on the phone
because he dies off camera
off camera it's true, but that is, you know, there was discussion about, do you do that moment or do you do the climax of the whole show when Shiv puts her hand on Matthew McFadden in that bit, but I agree with this choice that it's all about Logan Roy's death. That was such a shocking
which would you choose episode. From that category?
It's fucking difficult, I tell you, but do you know what, to be honest with you, I think I'm going to go for, by a tiny margin, Happy Valley.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to say this? Aren't you voting in this category?
No, we've decided.
Oh, it's a public vote. Oh, it's a public vote. Okay, fine.
That's where my vote would go for.
Just as a TV moment, I think that confrontation is one of the greatest scenes.
I think I would agree with you, but only because my beloved Last of Us is disqualified on a technicality, because that's an episode, not a moment.
Well, except not disqualified, but in your mind.
Yeah, in my mind, it's disqualified on a technicality, whereas that, I think, again, it's one of those classic things that what Sally Wainwright did there, she gave us what we needed, not what we wanted. And it was such a bold bit of screenwriting to do something so subversive and so not what you were expecting, that they're almost cordial to each other. After all these seasons of hatred, it's just
sublime,
magnificent.
Yeah.
Magnificent.
Oh, I should mention the writer. Let's do the writer nominees. So comedy writer, Jack Rook for Big Boys. Woo-hoo. Jamie Dimitriou for A Whole Lifetime of Jamie Dimitriou. It's that very funny sketch show on Netflix. Kat Sadler for Such Brave Girls, which has got a lot of recognition, rightly. And Mawan Rizwan, I'm very excited about, for Juice. Which was him and Russell Tovey. And drama, Charlie Brooker and Bisha K. Ali for Demon 79. Jesse Armstrong for Succession. Sally Wainwright for Happy Valley. And Phelpsy for The Sixth Commandment.
God, fantastic. Hard category,
Hard category. And the actual BAFTAs themselves will be held on the 12th of May. What a weekend that is, right? Because not only have you got the BAFTAs on the Sunday, you've got the Eurovision Song Contest on the Saturday.
Oh,
Doctor
good.
Who,
oh,
starting before it, which was revealed this week, and absolutely with a double bill of episodes before Eurovision.
Bloody
fantastic. God. And asked to play Man United as well that weekend.
I mean, what could we possibly watch? I mean, how could we be expected to choose?
Gigantic.
I do feel bad, because I didn't get on with Such Brave Girls at all.
Surprise.
It's a
tough show.
Yeah, clearly I'm very much in the minority there. Okay, well, that was the TV BAFTAs.
Yeah.
Exciting
There
stuff.
Is more news.
Oh.
I mean, it's all me. I'm sick of the sound of my own voice.
No, carry on.
I love it.
Yeah, let's give us more.
So as well as being confirmed just after the thing we did the last podcast, that Doctor Who will premiere on the 11th of May. Did we talk about it last week? At midnight. So it's going to be, bearing in mind, it's huge for Disney Plus now as well.
Yep.
So it's going to arrive on Disney Plus 7 p.m. American time, New York time, which means that it's going to arrive on the iPlayer at midnight on that Saturday, which has been proved controversial. I tweeted this out when it was announced, and I had loads of people saying to me, as if I'm involved in the decision, that, you know, it means you can't review it communally, blah, 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 blah. But I think that's right. I think people will still watch it communally, but people also have the thrill. Like, if I was a teenager now, like, oh my God, at 1 minute past midnight, I can watch Doctor Who on that Saturday. I'd be absolutely delighted. So that's a huge thing. Then they just announced yesterday the big news that Stephen Moffat has written an episode of this new series. They're not going into detail, but that is very exciting stuff. And I have kept this a secret. I've known this for, I think, 9 months.
Oh, my. Yeah, but you told me.
No, I haven't told anyone. And do you know how I knew? And this is massive name drop. At the Edinburgh TV Festival, I saw him. Moffat's always there at the Edinburgh TV Festival because that's where he met his brilliant wife, right? So he always goes every year. And I go every year. And I saw him there. And he was sat on a podium. They have podiums in the reception area, if you like, in a corner. And he said, he saw me and he said, oh, motioned him to come over. And on his laptop, visibly, was a script with Doctor Who at the top. And I was like, oh, like that. Oh, brilliant. And he goes, no, shut his laptop. And he goes, no, I haven't told anyone. It's a massive secret. No one's going to know. You can't tell anyone. And I haven't told anyone since.
Wow.
Yeah. So there you go. Very exciting. That's my
A very
news.
Discreet man.
Very discreet. You can tell me anything. I'll keep it a secret. Any other news?
Well, yes, there has been some other news in that there was a trailer that dropped for Star Wars Acolyte.
Oh, yeah.
Which is one of the more exciting Star Wars shows coming up. And I have to say, I was blown away by it. And I've become quite cynical about these Star Wars series on Disney Plus. But genuine, it looks different. It looks new. I love their post. They've got this post where it shows it's got like a lightsaber. It's got like a blood sort of smear coming out the end of it. So it looks like a red Sith lightsaber. But yeah, it feels like it has a very distinct identity. Obviously, you can't tell much from a trailer. But this has made me very, very excited for The Acolyte, which I think drops in June.
Yes. And I know why you're particularly excited about it as well.
Why is that, Boyd?
Because someone involved, was it the star or someone, said they haven't used the volume. Did you see that?
I didn't see that.
Yes.
Oh, well, now
they
it's
made a point
instantly
of saying,
five stars.
I think it was the writer, lead writer, or someone said, in Variety or somewhere I saw. And I immediately thought of you.
Yes.
I thought they had not using the volume. Woohoo.
Do you think they're doing it just for me?
I think
they've listened to this podcast. I'm like, you know what? He's absolutely right. We need to move away from the volume.
Yeah.
Go full Andor.
Turn down the volume.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. I know. No. So I'm pretty excited about that. Okay, obviously you are thrilled and looking forward, counting down the days to when we can review that one.
Couldn't be more excited.
Kay was properly, so we were going to review X-Men 97 on Pilot Plus, but we couldn't get the screeners in time. And it has to be said, Kay shed a tear.
Devoed.
She was well sad about it.
I see they have sent them now.
They did.
And did you put them up?
Maybe we should do a special episode.
I look forward to
animated
YouTube, didn't
sci-fi.
Yes, they did them now. I mean, it literally dropped to Disney Plus today. So.
Oh yeah.
I'm not sure how helpful.
At one point, James was like, "We could get up early and watch it, and then do that." And we're like, "No."
And Kay was like, "Yeah." Kay was like, "I know. Here's an alternative idea. How about we don't?" So
we didn't get the screeners in time, so
what's
to be done. There is a Gucci saga set for TV adaptation. So obviously we've had the film, House of Gucci, and now we're getting a TV adaptation with the real-life Gucci family on board as part of the production team. So quite excited for that. I mean, it feels like every week we're getting a new TV show dedicated to a fashion designer, but...
Yawn.
Why not another one?
Wow.
Sorry. I'm so over the fashion designer.
I mean, as long as
it depends. I'll give it the benefit of the doubt, but as long as it isn't about a maverick who's being rude to everyone in the atelier, then I'll be fine.
I mean,
also, the Gucci story is like, you know,
it's like
interesting.
What? But wasn't that House of Gucci?
There was House of Gucci.
At least so, like
Ridley Scott.
Yeah.
I mean, New Look had the benefit of having Nazis and stuff in it to keep it interesting.
I mean, but even did you ever think you'd hear that sentence?
No, it's true. It was improved by the presence of Nazis.
James, as we know, is a big fan of the Nazis.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, wow.
Sorry. I mean,
but
this podcast has gone in a weird direction.
Also, he doesn't deny it. He just goes, wow.
Yeah.
Hey, no. I'm like, in that show, I was like, if the Nazis had not been here, I'd have been out. But the presence of...
He's actually doubling down.
Yeah, I am. Is, yeah. The World War II aspect of that, and the fact that she has dinner with... Was it Goering or Himmler? I can't remember.
Himmler.
Yeah. Himmler. Yeah, that's Himmler. Just dinner with Himmler. Yeah. I'm like, it's so absolutely outrageous. Mm. I was like, this at least is keeping me from getting bored while they talk about sewing.
Okay, so James, number one, is very excited for the new Gucci show. That's all my news.
Is there any other news? I don't know that there has been. Let me have a quick look. They are writing Yellow Jacket season 3. That was an update on the production of that one. Kay is like, absolutely not.
No.
Yeah, I must admit, my excitement for that has waned somewhat. I don't know how much other news there is in the TV front, unfortunately. I don't think it's been a particularly wild week.
Netflix has revealed the first trailer for Korean horror sci-fi series Parasite the Grey, which
I hear those words coming from Kay. But you know what? Funnily enough, before I came here, there's loads of TV changes. This is so boring. This is in this week, in the run-up to Easter, that we were working on live for Heat Magazine and our other TV magazines in Bauer. And I'm going to have to put that in because loads of films are dropping out left, right, and centre.
Well,
things are dropping out left, right, and centre.
You can thank me for alerting you to that.
Topical. I'll get you to write the preview if you want.
Oh, listen. It's very you.
Yeah. Not only is it horror sci-fi, but it's also, what country is it from? I think it's subtitled as well.
Yes, Korean.
Subtitled, yeah. But we might have to review it next week, who knows, depending on embargoes.
Yes, depending on embargoes, indeed. There's also a trailer for Chaos, which we saw at the Netflix kind of their little day that they did, showcasing all the stuff. And that's the Jeff Goldblum as Zeus, Gods on Earth type show.
Yeah.
No excitement. Anyway.
No, I was very excited when we watched it at the Netflix event.
Yeah, I'm desperate for Godzilla. This is totally tangential, and it's a film. Godzilla Minus One, it called? I can't wait to see that on. It's taking ages to arrive on, streaming and
on the.
I don't know.
Hopefully, we'll get to see it soon.
Yeah, right.
But you got Godzilla X Kong to tide you over, boy.
Yes, well, indeed.
And we're going to be seeing that on Wednesday, aren't we?
Yes, we are. Yes, true. Terrifying.
Right, okay, I think that is it for news. I think we're done with that, in which case it's probably time to move on to the review section of this podcast. Three new shows for you to feast your eyes on, and the first one we're going to begin with is the 6-part Channel 4 comedy Big Mood, which stars former Derry Girl and sometime Lady Featherington Nicola Coughlan as Maggie, who has been best friends with Eddie, played by Lydia West, forever. And this show, the setup of which, I have to be honest, isn't entirely clear, seems to chart the ups and downs of their friendship amidst Maggie's struggle with what I think is being portrayed as bipolar disorder, right?
Yeah.
Which is something that you come to understand as the episode sort of plays out. But this particular episode is around a school reunion thing. So it's a very specific, well, anyway, I'll get into that in a minute. But I would make a joke now about Kay doing it and Big Mood, but I'm frankly too scared to do it. So why don't you tell us about the show?
Yeah, you're right to hold back on that. As you say, so Nicola Coughlan stars as Maggie. She has bipolar disorder, and she is best friends with Eddie, played by Lydia West. And in this first episode, Maggie comes up with the bright idea. She wants to go back to her old school and give a talk. So she is a playwright, not a massively successful one, but she wants to go back to her old school because she remembers fancying the history teacher there. And so she thinks that if she goes back, she'll catch his eye because she knows he's still there. And they might cop off. So that's basically the plan.
Perfectly reasonable.
Yeah, I mean,
excuse. Listen,
it's a absolutely realistic meet cute.
Who among us has not done the same thing?
Exactly. And he was her knight in shining armor because basically, she in a flashback, we see that she was at once at the school disco and a very lechy, actually, in fact, it was the, I don't know which teacher it was, one teacher basically.
I believe it was the maths teacher.
Was it a maths teacher? Mm. Right. Got a bit handsy with her. And this Mr. Wilson, the history teacher, came and saved her. But it turns out maybe because he had his eyes set on her himself, which is a bit grim. But yeah, it's all about that. You know, Eddie is incredibly supportive friend because even though she probably thinks this is a really bad idea and it is very car crash, she goes along, even though she's having her own sort of drama in the background. I really like this. I thought it was really funny, which you wouldn't necessarily expect covering serious subjects like bipolar disorder. But yeah, it's really amusing and made me laugh a lot. And it's about the solidarity of this female friendship. Yeah, they're early 30s, navigating life and mental illness. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really funny.
Can I ask a question of both of you? So the reason why I was alluding to the setup and anything is I felt, and this isn't, you know, I actually enjoyed the show, spoiler, but I thought this felt like a middle episode rather than a first episode. And the reason I mention that is because unless I missed it, the bipolar thing is not addressed until quite late in the episode. Mm. And there's, you know, traditionally when you start a sitcom, there's establishing narrative, isn't it? Like, these are your characters, this is a broad setup, and we lay out our stall, this is what this show is going to be. And this wasn't that. This first episode is very much a device plot-driven episode. A thing happens. A very specific thing happens, which is distinct to this episode. So it feels like an episode two or an episode three, where you've already established what's going to happen, and then this escapade happens. Whereas all the way through, I'm like, I'm enjoying this, but I don't know what this show is about. I couldn't, if you pin me down, tell you what the premise of this show is.
Well, you wouldn't you just think, when you immediately watch it, wouldn't you just think it's about friendship from
yeah,
the start,
absolutely,
right?
And that is what it is about. But
I think also it's like, maybe it's that, I don't know, maybe they have swapped the order of the episodes, maybe I'm just like...
I don't think so.
I think it was written
very
this way.
Isn't
it that
yeah.
they don't want her to be labelled, you know, like yeah. this is not a mental illness.
Kay, I need to be spoon-fed. What can I tell you?
Yeah. It's not a mental health, like, comedy drama. It's like about friendship, and it's kind of not incidental, but like, obviously she does have bipolar disorder. Yeah.
It's about how people with something like bipolar
yeah.
don't want to be seen as someone with bipolar.
Yeah.
So it
well,
is
it's not the only thing about them.
No, exactly. Defined
but
by it.
The show is called Big Mood.
I know, but it's an absolute deliberate by the writer, Camilla Whitehill, I think, to not ram the point home early on because
yeah.
it would, I think that does make you think immediately this is about the label and it's about that syndrome, is about that mental health issue, if you like. Whereas all you really need to know, if you're, I think it's quite a James way to think about it, in the nicest possible way, all you really need to know is she has issues,
yeah.
her best mate has issues, they're kind of codependent, whatever. I'm never quite sure what that actually means, but I think it means that, you know, they're kind of not dealing with the issues, possibly because they're relying on each other to help out in a way. You know what I mean? Go on,
I don't know if they're codependent. I think they're just best friends, right?
That word was thrown around in the by the way, I'm at a slight advantage because I went to the launch of this show.
Oh, so you got the inside scoop.
Well, I got the inside scoop, and not only that, unusually, and this is pertinent to your point actually, is that they showed three episodes, and in fact, the whole bipolar issue is really foregrounded in episode three when we meet her therapist,
right?
Absolutely brilliantly, have to say, played by Sally Phillips, who is hilarious. Oh. And if you want to see like a bad therapist depicted, which I think is a really common thing. Because friends of mine have done that. You know that online one where you can have...
Oh, CBT.
No, the online therapist. What's it called? It's like anyway, there's loads of ads for it.
Talking therapy.
But you do it, you know, on your iPod or iPad or whatever. And people go through them because some of them are terrible. Some of them are just terrible. And this one, the whole one, is really amusingly terrible. Anyway.
Worse than Afterlife.
Kind of on a par. It's a good example. Yeah, the one in Afterlife, the Shriek in Afterlife. But yeah, so it's much... That's becomes... the thing that it's about in that third episode, kind of halfway through the series. So I'm I knew that was coming.
That's interesting though, that they've kind of put it back, because I get what you're saying, like about not setting that out and defining the show by it. But it's curious that, because when I was watching the first episode, I was unclear. I was like, I don't get why this is called Big Mood. I'm like, and it wasn't until it kind of felt, I was like, oh, right, now I get it.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a very interesting way of tackling it.
The kids use a lot. It's the other thing that in Big Mood, you know, it's a common phrase among the youth.
I mean, hanging out. Yeah. With the kids as I do.
Saying,
I obviously know that.
I know.
But the bottom line is, this is funny, it's raw, it's real. Can I just point out one gag I really liked?
Yes.
So Eddie goes along to this school to support her friend and poses as her publicist, and she calls herself Adele Dazeem, which
that was a good gag.
The John Travolta, Idina Menzel confusion.
There's a great gag that's when you meet her agent. Is she in episode one?
No.
Of course, I can't remember what's in episode one, two, or three. But we meet her agent who is
hilarious. Your memory's definitely better than mine.
We meet her agent who's hilarious, who says she's kind of busy. She's got to go and fix Sally Wainwright's printer. And then she says, and there's multiple Sally Wainwright references in that episode, which are absolutely hilarious. And she also, there's also a Fleabag reference. Is that in episode one?
No, maybe not.
So they're kind of like, because people will compare, I think, to Fleabag in some way. A little bit, because, you know, Fleabag dealt with, you know, she was dealt with grief, the Fleabag herself, and just the tonally, I think it's quite similar. Fleabag had really real, you know, the cliche of dark comedy, but Fleabag had really poignant, sad stuff, particularly when it came to the death of her best friend. And this, when it gets into the nitty gritty of Nicola Coughlan's character's mental health issues, it's really quite heavy. It's coming up, slight warning for you.
Oh, great.
So it doesn't flinch, put it this way, from the real hard edges of that You know,
oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it doesn't soft soap it. So I would tonally, I was reminded of it. But equally, I'm reluctant to say that because as Camilla Whitehill, who's an incredible figure, by the way, she was at the launch.
Isn't she best friends with
She's best real life best friends with Nicola Coughlan. Yeah, did you know? Yeah, for years and years, like 10, 15 years. They met at drama school, I think. So she kind of wrote this completely with her in mind. She's a playwright, really. So Nicola's character is a would-be playwright or playwright in this, and she is an actual real life playwright. And she's a very, very funny, she's very funny in the Q&A, hilarious. And she completely shot down all, like, you know, female comedy is not a genre, that kind of thing, you know. And, you know, there are loads of shows about male friendship and no one picks up on it. So absolutely, that's true. But it still totally did remind me of Fleabag. And there's no higher compliment. I think the way it mixes, the tonal shifts, the way it's funny, funny, funny. And there's like really silly stuff. Episode two, there's an amazing stuff. There's the throw birthday party and there's like rats crawling around. The whole thing is insane.
No spoiler.
But really, really funny and incredibly poignant and at various moments sad and melancholic at the same time. So I really liked it. I thought it was top notch, I have to say. Oh, and but I should say, the other thing, Nicola Coughlan is phenomenal. Yes. I think she's so brilliant in the role. Like, you completely forget of her other, you know, legend characters and Lydia West, you know,
and a great chemistry
around as well.
Between them.
The totally believable relationship, isn't it? Yeah, friendship. So I think it's brilliant.
Yes, it's very good. I liked it a lot. Other than that, I found that curious, the construction.
Yes.
The deliberate construction of that first episode.
Yeah.
I found it interesting that they decided to go there. And I was a little bit discombobulated. You know how I love a label.
Oh, yeah.
I love a label.
Let's not get hung up on the name.
Exactly.
Let's not be too literal and just...
But like I say, I found that an interesting talking point. It didn't take away from my enjoyment of the show. I just found it an interesting choice, which is why I wanted to talk about it. But yes, good. Big mood. Big mood lands. Boy, do you win.
Channel 4, Thursday, the 28th of March, 2024, 10 o'clock in a double bill. And then it's all on channel4.com as well, of course.
All four, as I like to call it. No.
It's not all four. It's not more four.
I know,
it's not four hub. It's not 4OD.
Yeah, 4OD,
do you
remember?
It's just channel4.com.
Channel 4.
Yeah.
Okay. Next up, as you've already heard, Ewan McGregor, the erstwhile Ben Kenobi, returns to our screens this week in a role more moustache than man as His Excellency Count Alexander Rostov. And this is a show based on the 2016 novel of the same name, as I mentioned, by Amor Towles. And he plays an aristocrat after the October Revolution, and Count Rostov finds a Russia, let's say, much less welcoming to people of his ilk. But thanks to a poem he wrote, he's not shot against war, but instead condemned to spend the rest of his days in a 5-star hotel. A kind of fate you can probably imagine one day befalling our very own Boyd Hilton. And speaking of which...
Oh, I hope so.
Speaking of which, who better to discuss this one than our very own connoisseur of 5-star accommodation? Boyd, would this elicit a 5-star TripAdvisor rating for you, or put another way, were you out for the count, or is this absolute Bolsheviks?
What an intro.
Do you know what that is? Brilliant.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Well done.
Funnily enough, because as second only to my fondness for plane set thrillers and dramas, hotel settings, as I've said before as well, I love. So this is catnip for me, this show, in terms of the hotel. It, by the way, I mean, you've explained the story very well, so I don't have to. It kind of ends up, at least this first episode, I've only watched the first one. I think there are like 7 more to go. Yeah, there are 8 episodes, this thing. And the first episode, apart from the opening, which explains how Ewan McGregor's character, the Count, gets away with being shot and killed and executed due to this, as you say, poem is written, which pretends to take the side of the working classes. Once he's then installed back into his hotel in a shitty little room, to be fair, but then proceeds to be able to have his dinners and get his hair cut, go to the barbers, make new friends, hang out with Paul Reddy's character, who's really funny. It's kind of like a hangout show. Very little plot going on.
I'm not
averse to it at all, but because it's a great place to hang out. The hotel is brilliant. Mm-hmm. Like it's a bit like a Wes Anderson style setting. The way, you know, it's a very beautiful, beautifully established, presumably set, this hotel, but it's totally set within that world. And you basically just follow the Count, played brilliantly by Ewan McGregor. I think this is a dream, perfect role for him because he's so light, isn't he? He's very like light on his, you know, it just has a kind of like frothiness to his performance, which then it kind of spreads throughout the whole thing. And it becomes a kind of like quite a joyous thing, weirdly, even though it's about this guy trying to avoid being executed effectively. But he's really having a fun time. Mm. And this guy is really fun to be with and hang out with. So it kind of like, it ends up being a hangout show that is fine because everything, it just makes you happy.
I'd say it's better than fine. I really have to say,
I was not expecting, when you see, I don't like criticizing marketing people, but when you see the poster, it doesn't capture the joy of the show at all.
Well, which kind of like, poster? There's the one of him holding the Fabergé egg, where he does have a bit of a twinkle in his eye, which I think actually does a better job of conveying what this is.
There's another
it's
poster.
So funny you've gone in on that, because I was actually going to compliment the publicity team, because of all the shows, I've had the most emails about this, but not in an annoying way, but they flagged it so much that I've been so excited to see it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, they've done... Sorry, I should say, just whoever designed one of the posters. I mean, No, you're right. They've... Please, will you watch this show? And it's one of those shows, until you watch it, it doesn't look necessary. Like a gentleman in Moscow, you think it's going to be a spy series or something?
Do you know what? Ordinarily, I wouldn't have watched it. No. I would have thought, oh, it's going to be really heavy and a bit, you know.
But the thing is frothy and light in a very delightful way.
Absolutely. There's a romanticism to it as well. It's so beautifully shot and the setting. And like, you would think, oh God, him being stuck in one hotel, that's going to rapidly, like, you're going to lose interest. It's quite boring when it has to be so static and stuck. It's not, because there's so many different things to explore. He meets this young girl who starts showing him different parts of the hotel that adults wouldn't usually see, which is fun and like, you know. But also, Ewan McGregor is so good in this role. As you say, there is a lightness to it. And you can tell he's enjoying it. Is it this character is all about the spirit of his character, right? The stoicism. But it's like he is unfailingly polite and chipper despite his circumstances. So they have stripped him of all his wealth, of his privilege. And yet he is resolutely upbeat about it. He reminded me, not in being upbeat, but a little bit of my personal favourite, Poirot, because of his moustache and his like his fastidious observation of rules and manners and etiquette. And like, even though some of the people there, because you don't know who to trust in that hotel because there are people spying and, you know, like he's not going to be using his title, anything like that. And but even still, even despite being treated quite shabbily sometimes, he is unfailingly polite, and I just thought it was so well done.
That's well observed, I always think, because I very much got the impression that he was using manners as armour a little bit. Like, it's that sense that, you know, when everything is against him, when his back's against the wall, when his life is on the line and he's lost absolutely everything, what he has left is his manners. And, you know, so he's very formal because he's clinging to that identity. And there's a line, I think he says to Paul Reddy's character, like, they can take your money, they can take your house, they can take everything, but they can't take who you are.
Yeah.
And I think that's what he clings to his identity because it's the only thing he has left. But there's also the little twinkle in his eye where he's taking the piss ever so slightly out of them. There's like a hint of sort of very sort of like arch defiance to him, which is a lot of fun as well. Like, he's a cheeky chappy, and I think that's quite fun. When he's like, when they put him in this awful room and the bed squeaks, he's like, oh, G sharp. It's funny. It is funny.
Also, I just like small details, like in the flashback, how his perspective, like, is the camera's perspective. I just like this. Yeah, I think it's well shot.
This, by the way, is written by the showrunner of the show, is Ben Vanston. Do you know what he's most famous for?
Tell me.
The Channel 5 All Creatures Great and Small.
I thought you were about to say Love Rat. I was going to say no.
Essentially, he's saying shove that in your pipe.
No, I'm not saying it for that. I'm just saying it's a really, because that is a lovely show. It's one of Channel 5's best, and that's, you know, the most popular probably ongoing drama. It started back in 2020.
Was it always on Channel 5?
No, it was on BBC decades ago, the first version. They rebooted it cunningly, and he was the main writer for it. He is the main writer of the show, and I must admit, because I hosted one of the screenings of that show.
Of course
you did, yeah.
But delighted for him, because he's done a brilliant job, I have to say. Quite, you know, in many ways a challenging adaptation. And the other thing I was going to say was, did you know that originally, who the original star was going to be when it was first announced?
Who?
Ken Branagh.
Oh, really?
Yes, I can see that.
I mean, the man gives good moustache. Mm. So
he does.
Well, except for in Poirot.
I mean, you can't fault the Poirot moustache.
Okay, don't get started.
You don't like the moustache. Is it too elaborate? Is that the problem?
Oh my God, it's ridiculous. It's not Poirot's moustache, but anyway, it's fine. It's a panto
moustache. Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, no, I was pleasantly surprised by this.
Yeah, me too. I enjoyed it a lot. I thought it was great. A lot of fun. Really like the character. As you say, it's just the setting. Mm. It has a slight twisted fairy tale feel to it, a slightly surreal vibe to it, which I really liked.
He's in that. It's almost like he's in a snow globe, right?
Very much
because
so.
Because he can't go outside.
Yeah.
No risk of being.
And I like the idea that I say twisted fairy tale because it's like he's in this strange, heightened existence, but there's the threat always hanging over him. Yeah. And I think Paul Reddy's character in the first character, and he plays it beautifully because he does that very same thing where, like, I mean, you see it in some of Paul's other roles where it's that sense of there's a real vulnerability to the character, a real sense of a real sort of woundedness to him in this. Yeah. And I really liked the way that was played. And I thought one of the later scenes, I will say, with the violin, I thought was magnificent.
Oh, yeah.
That was really, really good.
Great in this. Yeah. 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 Mm. That was
really,
very poignant.
Really loved that. So, yeah, really, really good episode. Very surprised by this. Loads of fun.
Ewan McGregor in his gilded cage.
Indeed. A Gentleman in Moscow, which is also in Paramount Plus. When, Boydie?
Friday the March 29th.
I'll March 29th.
It's on Friday, March 29th. I believe all late episodes drop on that very day for a little Easter weekend. Is it Easter weekend? I think so. Yeah, Easter weekend treat.
Which year?
2024.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the reminder.
That's A Gentleman in Moscow. And I will be A Gentleman in Salford this week because the Empire Podcast goes to Manchester.
Thanks, Alan.
I will be going full Partridge in the final date of our tour, which is this week. We were in Dublin last week, although as we record this, I've yet to go. But we were in Dublin last week and our final date is in Salford Quays. The end of our tour. Kay has a hand up. Hi, Kay.
Question.
Yes.
How did the Irish kind of like welcome you after your accents?
Well, I mean, obviously as we go out, I can answer that question. But as we record, I can't because I fly there tomorrow morning as we record.
Oh, sorry, I wasn't
just to pull the to pull the curtain back. I mean, it's Wednesday. We go on Thursday.
You duped me. So, yeah. I was like a listener then. I thought, oh, brilliant. He's
yeah, seen. I'm literally just gonna wander around Dublin, going Donald Gleeson, Donald Gleeson, and see what happens.
What a perk for the Irish.
Yeah,
that is.
It's gonna be fabulous.
I meant to say, in Annika Ruff got in touch because you were in Sheffield, weren't you?
I was in Sheffield.
And
yes.
She said she was absolutely one of our listeners. Said she was absolutely devastated that your lasting memory of Sheffield is the travel lodge.
Oh my God. Genuinely, that I will carry the trauma of that place till the day I die. I'm pretty sure it was a lot. It was a lot. Right, let's move on to the final show of the week. And next up, we have Mandy on BBC something?
Two.
BBC Two. Specifically, Series 2 of Mandy, which stars Diane Morgan as Mandy. I'm not sure I can possibly do this justice. I do feel the complexities are beyond my mortal ken, but Kay will happily step up, I suspect.
Already. Do you know what? Already.
Hackles are raised.
Yes, because look.
Kay. Yeah. I'm just going to say, look, we should be perfectly honest with people. We should be perfectly honest with people. Like, you know, Renegade Nell, which stars another Derry girl, is embargoed, so we're going to have to do that on Pilot Plus. We needed another show. And I'm not saying on any level that we're only doing this because A, you'd already seen it, and B, it's 15 minutes long. But here we are. It's Mandy Series 2.
We love Diane Morgan.
We do. And she's great.
Okay. And we've already just talked about Motherland as
well.
So,
big fan of Diane Morgan.
Yeah. And she's great in this. So, this is her comedy character, Mandy, who is like, I usually absolutely rail against James when he says the word silly, but she's a silly character. She's like she's like ludicrous and she's daft. Yeah, exactly. It's probably a better word. And she is perpetually unemployed. Physically, she's very funny to look at. She's got this ridiculously high bun she wears, her lips, she manages to, Diane Morgan does this brilliant thing.
What is that gurning thing she's doing?
She holds her mouth in a certain way, so it's on the shonk.
Yeah. on the shonk.
Shonk yeah, mouth.
It's shonk mouth. Yeah. And she's got these high-heeled boots she always wears. She looks like, as I said before, anyone who watches or has watched EastEnders, she's like Shirley Carter. And actually her surname in this is Carter, I think, Mandy Carter. Anyway, always unemployed. In this first episode, we meet her. She is bemoaning the fact she doesn't have a job, and her mate, a technician called Lola, says, "Why didn't you become an air stewardess? Because you've got the hype for it. You'd be perfect to that." And she reveals, in a shock moment that actually she's not as tall as she as everyone thinks.
James is shaking his head.
It's because of her massive, massive heels on her boots, and she takes them off and she's ridiculously short. And in her infinite wisdom, and you have to go with this, and this I should have pre-warned James, you just have to roll with it, James. She has a leg lengthening operation. Yeah. And she gets fitted with magnetic leg calipers, and she fulfills her dream of becoming cabin crew. But obviously one of the downfalls of having those magnetic calipers that everything, of course, gets attracted to her. Many things happened in that episode, which are obviously ludicrous, but kind of amusing. And best of all, I have to say that once again, as we've said, it's actually a really brilliant week if you're a fan of Paul Reddy, because he's in this too. He's got an amazing cameo. So it's a Motherland reunion. And yeah, it's just like, I think you just have to go with it. And if you go with it, it is amusing. So And as James says, it's kind of 15 minutes long. So if you just want a bite-sized snack of fun.
Well, can I ask a question? How many... is this a thing? I'm not familiar with the 15-minute comedy.
Yeah, it goes back years. Goes back years and years and years. I mean, I'm trying to remember. There was Rob Brydon's car set comedy that I forgot the name of that was in 15-minute chunks. I think maybe even 10-minute chunks. BBC Two's been doing them for years and years and years. And if my brain didn't forget the titles of things... Marion and Jeff. There you go. I just pulled it out.
Well, yeah. Done.
Rob Brydon's Marion and Jeff was like 10, 15 minutes back in the day. There was the spoof Tomorrow's World show as well.
Oh, yeah.
Which was 10, 15 minutes on BBC Two. It's like they do it a lot. Yeah, it's I think it works really well because, and they're showing them in double bills anyway. This is showing in double bills. So you get two episodes every week on BBC Two anyway, and it'll be on the iPlayer. So, but yeah, to have enough lovely little silly chunk of ridiculousness in 15 minutes works really well, I think, in some
context. It's an antidote
context.
To all this the heavy drama.
It is absolutely
bonkers.
Fucking preposterous.
Yeah.
And giddily and silly. It is silly. Finally,
yeah.
Yeah.
We've reached a comedy that is proudly silly. It wants to be silly. That James can call it silly without being inaccurate. In any way,
and it's not insulting.
Not insulting. Diane Morgan having to just try... There's a certain type of comedy which I completely approve of, which is just you're trying to get as many stupid laughs as humanly possible into its whatever its running time is, and that's what Mandy is. And there's a massive place for that. For me, there's many of these stupid comedies as possible. It's hilarious, and the fact that the first episode is set aboard a plane as well, it's like a plane
board
set
was in heaven.
I mean, it's total heaven. And brilliantly done, obviously on a tiniest of budget, this show, but yet somehow they made her with a calipers, and I'm not going to spoil what she has to do, but they kind of did it quite well within the context of an absolutely idiotic, nonsensical, deliberately storyline. And I love her in it. She's such a ridiculous character. So you say the droopy mouth.
Yeah.
And it's an observation because you do see people with weird resting faces, right? Resting, whatever you want to call them, faces.
What was it, Gay? What did we call it?
It's on shonk. The shonk.
On the shonk.
Face. resting shonk face. I see it all the time. I think, why? Do you realise that you're...
do you realise you have resting shonk face?
Exactly. No offence to anyone. But she's brilliantly crackers to the high school world, which is just a great invention, Mandy, the character. And they just give us so many hilariously stupid things to do. It's a great format, just a different job each time. It's a great, way
of... Do you know what? So much of this is the physicality as well, like you just said. But, even her walk, she walks on a shonk as well.
Yeah,
she's leaning back.
I love the fact that also every episode opens with the 10 nail technician character played by Michelle Greenidge brilliantly. Just kind of like, look, just dealing with her. She's a complete idiot. Kind of giving her these suggestions. Go and become an air steward, it'll be fine. So it's just great. It's just really funny. Yeah. But is it really funny, James?
I mean, no. It's not for me, is what I'm going to say. Like, because it is. I don't do silly. I can't abide silly. It's very, very silly. I don't feel that I'm particularly qualified to comment because I just have a natural inbuilt hatred of this kind of comedy.
Hatred?
So.
No, look, it is silly. And so he's right to say that. But also... comedy isn't his natural genre.
Particularly for this type of comedy. Yeah.
In particular. I think because it's like, you don't have to like a genre to appreciate it generally. But
you'd think, but with comedy, you rarely are like that.
I think the kind of, let's say, for example, like some people don't find horror films at all scary, right? They're not afraid of horror films. So if someone doesn't find horror films scary on any level, then no horror film is going to work for them, because fundamentally a horror film that doesn't scare you fails, because that's its entire, reason for existing, is to scare you. And if it can't do that, it doesn't work. So the same thing with these sort of things. I don't find these kind of things funny, so I can't really access them in that way, because fundamentally they just don't amuse me. And if a comedy doesn't amuse you, it fails, right?
I'm not sure about this argument, but I won't get into it.
Well, but
you don't find comedy funny.
I usually get into this argument with him. He often says,
"I just don't find things funny."
Well, no,
I don't find
I do.
Comedy funny.
But the thing is, I do. I just my tastes in comedy are quite specific. I enjoy comedy set against drama. I don't like comedy in heightened silly environments.
I usually.
It's a very, there's a kind of small, like the Venn diagram.
Yeah, because extraordinary is deeply stupid, right?
Exactly.
Like it is, but I love it.
Sometimes it's difficult to get the exact way.
There's a character called Jizzlord K.
I know, but I think that's just one element. I wouldn't say that's a stupid concept.
It's a high concept,
but it's not stupid.
But what I'm saying is it's quite difficult to get a handle on exactly the thing. Let's say, if you have a Venn diagram of silly comedy, acceptably character-driven comedy, fantastical comedy. It's like what he specifically will abide in the comedy genre is vanishingly small.
You like humour that's incidental, right? That just, you know, comes out.
It's not incidental and extraordinary. It's all about the comedy.
Oh, it is. True. But generally speaking, yes. Generally, I like comedy juxtaposed with drama. I find that the two things work hand in hand because then you have
and
the comedy.
And you don't like tonal shifts? I mean, it's the red, you know.
That's the ultimate joke.
I mean,
that's the ultimate
I'm a contradiction. What can I tell you?
Do you know what it is? He's an oxymoron.
Emphasis on the latter part, yes.
Yeah, true. Very true.
Oh, dear. Mandy, all of its 15 minutes arrive on BBC Two when Boydie.
Wednesday, the 27th of March, 10 p.m., 2024, in a double bill, but I do believe it'll all be on the iPlayer as well evening.
The iPlayer. What else is out this week?
What else is out this week? That is a good question. I'll tell you what else is out this week, James. There is, first of all, we couldn't review it because it's heavily embargoed. Renegade Now is the new one from Sally Wainwright, the aforementioned. Starts on Disney Plus on Friday. All drops as well in time for the big Easter weekend, but we're not allowed to review it yet.
But we'll be doing it. Yes, because the embargo will be doing it on Pilot Plus.
Exactly. Then there's a Steve Martin documentary, a documentary in two pieces on Apple TV Plus on Friday as well. There is a documentary called Barbie Uncovered about the real life battle for Barbie. That's on Sky Documentary /now on Wednesday. There is
American Rust returns for a second season. That's on Prime on Thursday. That's the Jeff Daniels series, which we reviewed, series one.
Yeah, it was like procedural, wasn't it? Kind of.
It's in being in this kind of like Rust Belt town, wasn't it?
It was a different story every week, wasn't it? Which I remember you.
That I don't know because I only watched one episode, so I really couldn't tell you.
It was.
But it's a family drama, wasn't it? Like it was going through this.
Extent,
the chief.
Yeah.
He was the chief of police, and it was in this town in Pennsylvania.
Right. There's Wreck series two. I was a big fan of series one of Wreck, which is kind of comedy horror, slightly more horror than comedy, but had a kind of tongue in its cheek a lot. That's back on BBC Three on Wednesday at 10 o'clock and all on the iPad, written by Ryan J. Brown. It's got a really good cast. Thaddeo Graham from Sex Education's in it, and Oscar Kennedy from Breeders, who's in Last Episode of Breeders, James's favourite, obviously. That's on, there's quite a lot, actually. I'm just making sure I haven't missed anything else out. Professor T is back. Do you remember that? That's a Ben Miller crime buster drama on ITV1 on Wednesday. It is a bit cozy crime, to be honest. Yeah, it's definitely not kind of edgy crime, put it that way. He's like, he's a therapist detective, I think. I think that's right. And that's also got Francis De La Tour, who's one of my favourites, in it as his mum. And that's quite good. Anything else? I think that might be it. But apologies if I've missed anything.
Well, with all of that in mind, what?
Oh, one more. Oh. Sorry.
Whoa. More to come.
This Town starts, which is the Stephen Knight drama on Sunday, Easter Sunday, which is within our week. But that is heavily embargoed, so we have to review it. It's also on the Monday as well, and we'll review it when we can.
Okay.
On the pod. So, this is his passion project about the growth of ska and new wave in the Midlands, in Coventry and Birmingham in the early 80s. And I've seen it, but absolutely embargoed for talking about it. Michelle Dockery's in it, very much cast against type. So we'll come to that when we can. That's Easter Sunday, 31st of March, BBC One. Don't miss it. We'll review it when we can.
Okie dokie. Well, what does that make our pick of the week?
Right, so
what have we reviewed again?
I'm going to choose A Gentleman in Moscow because I knew that I would like Big Mood and I really enjoy Big Mood, but A Gentleman in Moscow was a surprise.
Interesting. Mm. Wouldn't have picked that. Good.
No, I'm going Big Mood. I'm going Big Mood, yeah. I think it's great.
Oh, I don't know where to fall on this. I really like both of those episodes. I'm definitely not falling there.
Also, because Nicola Coughlan put my review of it up on her.
Big Mood is brilliant.
So, you know.
Yeah, I take one or either of those. I'm going to go with Big Mood just because I feel in this particular case it's the underdog. So I'm going to root for the underdog.
Oh, see, I don't see it as the underdog.
Well, Hugh McGregor, Paramount Plus, lavish budget, Bolsheviks everywhere.
Yeah, but the title works against it, I think.
Load of old Bolsheviks. Sorry.
Oh, dear. Right. That is this week's show done. If you enjoyed it, please do head over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or anywhere else. Frankly, engrave 5 stars on the wall of whatever building you happen to be passing and just say Pilot TV Podcast. Get a tattoo. Absolutely. Leave us a testimonial somewhere. Frankly, I'm hungry. I'm trying to cut back on my sugary foods, which means I'm craving sugary foods, which means I need cake. And the only way for me to get cake is for you to leave 5-star reviews of this podcast. That is the only way Kay will agree to buy some. Please do so. I need the sugar rush. If you would like to follow us on the social medias, you can find us at Pilot TV Pod, at James E. Dyer, at Boyd Hilton, and at Kay Ribeiro. On next week's show, oh, who knows what we'll be doing next week? Ripley lands next week, I believe, on the Netflix on Thursday, which is exciting. But more exciting than that, of course, is that the 5th and final series of Star Trek Discovery comes to Paramount Plus. Kay has specifically requested that we review that one, so that's a very exciting.
little snippet for you that will not be included. Or will it be? No, I think it might be, actually. In my Empire interview with Russell T. Davis and Shooty, Russell talked about how Star Trek Discovery, he didn't even like Star Trek that much until Star Trek Discovery came along, and now and he's a massive fan.
It's made him a Trekkie.
Yeah.
He's gone full Trek.
Yeah. There you go.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, okay, we'll find out what you think of that next week.
Not happening.
Yes, it is. Don't resist it. What else is happening next week? Sugar, the Colin Farrell sort of gumshoe series. That lands on Apple TV Plus as well. So we'll be doing a selection of those. That's quite fun. And that's it. We're done.
Good.
What an outro.
Yeah. What an outro.
Slick.
What an end. Oh, I'm nothing if not professional.
Let's end it.
We just let the podcast fade away. Just drift off into the sunset. Okay, so until next week, Kay has a full 7 days to watch the first 4 seasons of Star Trek Discovery. And you can bet she's looking forward to it. The first episode, Kay, is almost entirely in Klingon. Enjoy.
Absolutely not.
Pilot out.